Hello and welcome to the fourth and final part of our New Vic Theatre 60th anniversary podcast series. I'm Jill Rezzano, Head of Education at the New Vic Theatre.
And I'm Dr. Rachel Walker, Theatre Historian.
And today we're going to be hearing from our current Artistic Director at the New Vic Theatre, Teresa Heskins. And Rachel, you interviewed Teresa, that's right, isn't it?
I did, yeah. We had a Zoom interview and I was really interested to hear her perspective on the New Vic, having been in post since 2007. She did take over from Gwenda Hughes,
That's right, yeah. So Gwenda Hughes was our first Artistic Director since Peter Cheeseman retired. And Gwenda championed the setting up of the New Vic Borderlines Department and New Vic Education, as it is now, our outreach departments.
Yeah, that community aspect does keep on cropping up, doesn't it? I asked Teresa about that, actually, whether she still felt it was an important part of the way the New Vic was running these days.
Yeah, I think that, I think that idea of a civic theatre is one that we practice, really. And I think by that, I mean a theatre that has a huge level of responsibility to its community, both as the provider of artistic content, cultural activities, but also in terms of health and well-being and the kind of work that our participative departments do. And also beyond that as well, in terms of the way we encourage people outside of the area to look at us by, you know, promoting the great things about this area, the idea that it's a place where talent and excellence thrives. And the area gets quite a lot of bad press. So we're very proud to be one of the ways that we generate good press for the area.
Absolutely. Yeah, it really sort of celebrates the community, doesn't it, in so many ways. And in terms of sort of transferring to London in that way, because I think that's a big difference from how things were at the time that I was looking at. It seemed that they wanted to publicise in London, but they didn't want to sort of transfer in that same way, possibly because of the repertory company set up and things. Whereas it feels like that's a path that you're ploughing quite successfully, really.
Interesting, isn't it? So yeah, we went to Broadway in 2018. We took around the world in these days,
yeah.
New York and Florida, and then now taking Marvellous to this a historic moment of opening a new theatre in the Round in London. That's been amazing.
Yeah.
And in both instances, what was really fabulous was that they were shows that had been made for our local audiences by local people, because all the people that work in this theatre are local people as well.
Yeah.
And we've made it very much with this audience in mind, and yet seeing it going off and meeting a whole new audience, I have no idea, but people were coming from places like Kentucky to see Marvellous and saying, will it tour to America? I don't even believe they can understand.
Yeah.
They haven't compromised the Stokey accents or the Stokey references, but I think sometimes it's a little bit of a misnomer is the wrong word, but the fact that Cheeseman didn't do that necessarily, even though he might have had the chance, but it's not like it was completely not it, because I think that they were, and forgive me for not knowing this firsthand, but I think the research I've done is that they were taking shows that were made here for the New Vic and recording them for the BBC, and they were being broadcast by the BBC to a national audience.
Mm.
So it's same but different, really. It's not that they didn't expand their horizons to take work made here by local people for local people to a wider audience. They just did it via the medium of television rather than theatre.
Yeah, that's absolutely true, yeah. And it's interesting, isn't it, that idea of something that's so local that seems to have perhaps a totally different understanding from other people, but nevertheless equally entertaining for a completely different audience.
What's interested me about both of those shows is that I couldn't see anything sitting in there that was a different reaction from the audience to the audience here.
Oh, really?
I remember a night in Florida with Around the World in 80 Days thinking, you guys would love each other. I wish you could all meet each other. You're all laughing at the same thing. And it does make you feel, really, that, you know, that lovely thing about that we've got more in common than divides us is certainly something that I've felt. I just don't know how it works. I don't know what kind of strange alchemy there is there, but they just understand everything, and in exactly the same way as people here do. They maybe don't laugh at the word Chesterton just because it's being spoken on stage.
Yeah.
So that's something that we get here. You know, historically, you just have to say Bidulph and everybody laughs. And that laugh we don't get. But but it feels just as genuine and just as knowledgeable.
I think that's so interesting, the way that Newvik work does speak to audiences in such far-flung places across the world. And I think there's something about the way that actors interact with the audience, their performance, but also how it is distinctively theatrical and physical. And I think that's something that audiences respond to in such an immediate kind of visceral way. You know, it has that quality that you could bring almost anybody and they would have a reaction to that, because the actors are just giving everything of themselves in terms of how they are, you know, using their bodies, using their voices, connecting with us. And I think that's a really interesting part of the work that we do, how transportable it is, even though we are in the round and don't, you know, which doesn't fit everywhere. But I think what we do does fit everywhere.
So do you think that style of acting is born out of the proximity that the actors have with the audience at the Newvik, that it's because the company are so aware of their audience throughout the whole performance?
Yeah, I think Newvik actors have the word audience chiselled across their brains, really. So whether we're doing something that is, you know, a very physical performance or very naturalistic, all the time it's thinking about that connection, that communication, and how you want to reach out and tell that story. And yes, sometimes we do get, you know, very close to our audiences, but I think always it's about finding that channel that means you're reaching into the audience, right to the back, where you know that you're telling a story to a particular person, but in a way that's very public as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose not only the acting but also all the crafts that surround that all combine to create that story, don't they?
Completely. I mean, it is meticulous. And although we are a theatre in the round and we don't have the sorts of naturalistic sets you'd find in film, television, or perhaps some proscenium arch shows, everything is there to engage the imagination. So what we don't have on stage is done in a way that symbolises and provokes the audience's participation in that, to build that world with us and to build it for themselves. So every single thing that's on stage counts. And of course, being so close, our craftspeople and prop makers and set designers are always thinking about, you know, how you feel like you can reach out and touch, you know, that object, and it will feel incredibly real to you. So all of that helps you to locate yourself in that world, but it also stimulates your own piece of imaginative machinery in your own brain, which is the best piece of CGI there is, you know.
I asked Teresa about that, actually, about, you know, the importance of craftspeople working on site at the Newvik. So we'll have a listen now and see what she said.
Yeah, we're so lucky. There aren't many theatres that's the case with now, but it used to be. But to have your own workshops, craft and production departments, we tend to call them, so to have... you know, the paint shop, the scenic construction workshop, the costume team. It does mean a number of things. One, that we're providing work for all those people locally who have those skills and that interest, and you know, we're one of the only people that are providing that. And the other is that everybody's really subscribed to the work that's happening here and to making a difference to the area. So they don't only work on the main stage shows, but they also support the Education of Borderlines program, less so the Appetite program, because that tends to be work that's already been made elsewhere coming here rather than being produced here. So that's more about promotion rather than production.
But it seems almost that although it would be kind of impossible to run a repertory company in that same way, that it still has a lot of those similarities, doesn't it? That you seem to have a lot of people working, or they talk about it as a family still, it feels anyway.
Does. And you know, we're very loyal to people, but also always happy that the family grows, you know, like the next families do. I think that we've done, is it two or three repertory seasons? So we haven't run a repertory company in the way that it used to work, but we have done this. We did a 6-month rep season in 2011, and then we did another 6-month one in 2015 when we did the Horde Festival in association with the National Theatre Studio. And both times we had a big company of actors, and it did, I think, 4 or four main stage plays and a range of other fringe activities. And that was great. That was really exciting to do and have people here for a length of time. And I think that the other interesting thing about those rep companies was that quite a lot of actors made their home here.
Mm.
And in recent years, that has been less the case, but that seems to be changing now as well. I think more actors are moving out of London. And I think as the profile of this place changes for the better, actors are realising that there's a lot of reasons to live here, including cheap accommodation, but also there being the potential for work as well. So it feels like our kind of culture ecology is changing a lot. The Arts Council's recent announcement where we've got, we're not sure now whether it's 9 or 10 NPOs, National Portfolio Organisations, but there were only 3 for some years. So now, just recently, the Arts Council's totally changed that in one massive move.
Mm.
And so now there's instantly the cultural scene has grown quite significantly. So it's brilliant, isn't it?
I found it really interesting how much of what Teresa says there chimes with Peter Cheeseman's original vision of how he wanted his actors to function. You know, he talked about actors being seen as workers in the community, and he very much wanted them to be embedded within the community of Hearts Hill. Is that still the case with some of the actors at the New Vic, do you think?
Yeah, and living here and having a longer term residence here as well. And as you say, that idea of being embedded in the community, it certainly gives you an insight into our audiences, into the people who live here, in a ways that you wouldn't have in a normal kind of touring acting world. But I think as well for our audiences and for local people, that that visibility of those actors is really appreciated. And I think, you know, we sort of take those actors to our hearts because, you know, it's very much about how they are building a relationship. It's not just about, you know, coming in and doing a particular thing. It's about a relationship with the community, which certainly enhances the work. But I think, you know, it does build a bond. It certainly does. And that loyalty is reciprocated between the actors and between the audiences.
Mm.
Definitely.
We've talked a lot, haven't we, in this series about the community and the local aspects of the theatre, but I think it is important to recognise that the theatre has a growing reputation nationally too.
Absolutely, and I think it goes back to what, Teresa was saying about growing the family. You know, that there was that huge connection that audiences in the United States found. But I think we have a really, really good example of this in terms of the production Marvelous opening the first London West End theatre in 50 years at Soho Place. So I think that was a huge accolade to the company that trust to open the new building was put in our hands and was incredibly successful. So I think, yes, it is a growing reputation, but I like to think of it in the same way as kind of extending that family and that bond with the work that we do.
Absolutely. I think Teresa touches on this in the final section where I ask her about the vision, really, for the future of the theatre.
Well, I think we've got everything in place for us to become a Premier League theatre, same way Stoke had that moment, Stoke FC, when it moved into the Premier League. I think that's kind of... I was about to say where we're heading, but we might already be there.
Yes.
Because, you know, opening a West End theatre is probably one of the ways that you'd identify that. We're not as big a theatre as some of the others. You know, there are the big, we're classed as a middle scale theatre, but the recent uplift that the Arts Council has given us possibly gives us that same financial resource that some of the bigger theatres have. And I think that we've got a lot of really exciting partnerships in terms of commercial producers and things that mean that I'm hoping we'll take more of our work out to a wider audience and be able to invest more in the work we make here as well, so that local audiences will benefit from enhanced production values and cast sizes and things if all of that works out. Our education and borderlines and appetite departments are still going great guns as well, and that's really important that they make a difference and work in partnership with people like Keele University and Staffs University and the Constabulary and Fire and Rescue Service looking at things like always wanting to respond to the social agenda and to what's needed. So we're looking at warm spaces at the moment. Mm. And I think we'll always carry on doing that, responding to what we think people need and trying to make sure that we stay connected with our local communities so that we know what's happening there and how best to serve them.
I really like the fact that Teresa mentions Premier League, and I think that the 60th anniversary has given us real time to reflect on the fact that we've come from such an exciting past and we're going into an equally exciting future. And I think, you know, all of that is something that we can all celebrate.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, everyone listening, you're all a big, big part of the future of the new Vic. So we would love to hear from you. And if you do want to get in touch, remember our email is archive@newvictheatre.org.uk.
Thank you for listening. And thank you to all our friends and colleagues who've contributed their voices to this 60th anniversary podcast series.
This has been a New Vic Theatre podcast produced by Hollow Moon Media with music by James Earls Davis.